From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. I grew up in the South, and as a Black man, I don't remember a time I haven't heard racial slurs. Now, it didn't happen every day, but every now and then, that ugliness would pop up and would remind me of where I was. I don't mean the South, I mean America. We like to think that as a society, we've come a long way, and we have, but lately, that ugliness that many thought we'd left behind seems to be popping up with more frequency. Before we get started, a warning. Some of the speech in the following story gets really ugly. Over the past 18 months, the people we've spoken with have reported hearing stuff like this.
And then he said, I'll shoot as many Black people as I want in the back.
Dirty Muslims, terrorists.
She said, why don't you go the f*** back to China or wherever you came from?
Kick your ass back to your country, all you immigrants.
Advocacy groups report rising incidents of Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, violence and intolerance against the LGBTQ community. To dive into the numbers, Reveal is collaborating on a project called Documenting Hate. Last year, the nonprofit newsroom, ProPublica, started collecting accounts of hate speech and hate crimes across the country. Reveal's hate and extremism reporter, Will Carlos, dove into more than 4,000 of those incidents. As he sifted, one word surfaced early and forcefully.
Trump.
Trump, 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 Trump. Trump, Trump.
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 More than 300 people reported that they directly experienced or witnessed verbal attacks explicitly in the name of the president. Will followed up with more than 150 of those from 39 states, either by speaking with the victims or witnesses or by matching the incidents with news reports or other documentation. Here's more of what Will found out.
The 45th president, Donald J. Trump, launched his political career by challenging the citizenship and legitimacy of the 44th president, Barack Obama.
And people are trying to figure out why isn't he giving his birth certificate? It's not a birth certificate.
Then, as he announced his campaign for the White House, he stereotyped Mexican immigrants.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
The first part of that message resonated with elements of Trump's base. After he became president, the New York Times reported Trump saying the 15,000 Haitian immigrants who'd received visas for the United States all have AIDS. CBS News reported Trump's remark that Nigerians who emigrate to the U.S. only do so by leaving huts behind. Participants in a White House meeting on immigration say they heard the president use an obscenity to describe Caribbean and African nations. Trump's denied all of these statements, but here's how he criticized the lottery for U.S. visas from people from developing countries.
They're not giving you their best names. Common sense means they're not giving you their best names. They're giving you people that they don't want.
American politics have been full of racialized dog whistles. Democratic and Republican candidates have defended state sovereignty to maintain segregation and to fend off federal civil rights laws. Appealing to the so-called silent majority, white Americans wary of federal efforts to address racial inequality, helped Republican Richard Nixon win the presidency in 1968. Other candidates have harped on undeserving welfare queens and raised the specter of hardened criminals released from prison to rape and murder. Unlike earlier politicians, Trump doesn't bother with coding his language. And like players in a twisted game of telephone, his followers have aimed similar language at people they say don't belong in this country.
And that's when he yelled at me. Go back to Africa. The slave ship is loading up. Trump specifically yelled out Trump with his arm out the air.
In San Diego, Melissa Johnson tells me how she just emerged from a Trader Joe's grocery store when a stranger driving a new-looking BMW slowed down and shouted at her.
I was in complete shock.
Melissa's almost 40. She's dealt with bias pretty much her entire life. But the signals used to be subtle. Security guards keeping a close watch on her at Nordstrom's. An elderly woman in the elevator clutching her handbag a little bit tighter.
You know, these people, like I said, were hidden under rocks, hiding in caves. They weren't saying anything. They were keeping to themselves in their garages, you know, saluting to their flags or whatever.
These days, their statements in public and on social media strike her like hatred with a presidential seal of approval.
Now that they have a leader in office, now they're able to do whatever they want. And that's exactly how I feel, is that Trump has given these people so much power that they feel as though they're also running the country. That's what's changed, is that these horrible, ugly people now have a voice. And I'm so tired of hearing it, because I've heard it my entire life. But it was whispers before. Now they're yelling.
She says the words from the BMW driver stung.
He was obviously an idiot, but
what happened next was almost worse.
To have people, at least 20 people, standing around outside, just staring and not saying anything, not defending me, nothing. I was like, what? Really? Well, I guess I'm just going to go back to my car. And I sat in my car and I cried.
As I reported this story, one thing became very clear. When the most powerful man on earth,
Donald J. Trump,
makes a statement,
is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
His followers are willing to echo it out in the open.
So f*** you and your family, you terrorist f***. F*** you all you want. You're an Arab. You're a f***ing loser. Trump is president, f***. So you can kiss your f***ing visa goodbye, scumbag.
Honestly speaking, when somebody says something like that, you become, like, very hurt. And you just feel like you're not from this country, though you are. You're a citizen, like, you're a citizen of this country. You're staying over here. You're doing everything for this country. You feel very bad.
Mohammed Qureshi is a manager at a Washington, D.C. area Marriott hotel. He says that before, during, and after the election, he faced so many anti-Muslim taunts, he briefly changed his name tag from Mohammed to John.
This is my home. This is my country. I can do anything for my country. But when somebody comes and says, you're immigrants, you have to go back, so that's make me, like, in tears. I was literally in tears a couple of times.
Mohammed places the blame squarely on the new president.
Since Trump did in his campaigns and everything, so it's like all the hatred is coming out now against the Muslims.
As I called more than 80 people from California to Maine, they said they also believed their tormentors felt emboldened, empowered, granted impunity. I heard this from Muslims and Jews, from gay men and lesbians and Latinos and Asian Americans, even from a couple of white people who said they thought harassers singled them out just because they have thick, dark, curly hair. Why should it matter if people are shouting nasty things at each other and saying Trump's name when they do it? Well, beyond the lapse in common courtesy, words do hurt and scare people. I spoke with many who, like Melissa, felt deeply upset and unsafe after unprovoked confrontations with name callers. There's also strong evidence that along with slinging hateful words, more people are acting on hateful intentions in the name of Trump. Remember, for example, how a protester was killed and dozens more people were hurt during a right-wing rally last August in Charlottesville, Virginia?
Trump's words and Trump's targets have had a real-world effect in terms of crime.
Heidi Berich heads the intelligence project of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
There are many instances in that data where the person committing the crime, the hate crime, was specifically inspired by Trump. They either use Trump's name, they have Trump on their social media feeds. There are indications that the connection is exact.
The 150 cases I studied included several violent incidents, like one last February when a man on a scooter ran a gay couple off the road in Florida after screaming, "You live in Trump country now," or a case in Texas where a white man yelling, "This is for Trump," beat up a Latino man. Heidi says law enforcement agencies collect such inconsistent data on hate crimes, we simply don't know how many take place.
The FBI only reports about 6,000 a year. The Bureau of Justice Statistics has been clear that there are about 250,000 hate crimes a year in the U.S.
That research arm of the Federal Justice Department concedes that people also tend to underreport these crimes. The department describes these acts as physical harm and criminal threats based on race, color, national origin, religion, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. White supremacists like Richard Spencer and David Duke rejoiced at the result of the last presidential election. To them, Trump clearly embodied their worldview that for America to return to greatness, white people would need to maintain their social, economic, and political power over people of other races.
For the first time, we really saw a successful candidate coalesce extreme white nationalists into a real, tangible socio-political movement.
Brian Levin, who heads the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at Cal State University San Bernardino, has spent decades studying trends in hate. He has a theory about why so many people who fear a changing America consider the 45th president an ally.
36% of Americans say whites are under attack. 14% say whites are under attack and people of color aren't because of demographic, political conditions, terrorism, immigration, and when they had an outspoken, unusual, iconoclastic leader, they found it in Donald Trump. I am not saying, this will be for historians to debate, about the president's own state, own feelings. But what I can tell you is they've been interpreted by and a coalescing force for legions of white nationalists who have been organizing in ways that we haven't seen in decades.
For this story, I left several phone and email messages with the White House and got no response. Some of the president's supporters pledged to act on their interpretations of what he said, including, at an extreme, the idea that America's a white country created by and for white people.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
In various forms, that message has even made its way into the classrooms of kids as young as elementary school.
And he said, this is Trump's wall.
10-year-old Khalil Stevens-Rosner tells me how, just after the election, a kid in his class stacked building blocks into walls so he could separate the white students from their black and Latino schoolmates in the Denver suburb of Arvada, Colorado. Khalil's parents, Jory Stevens and Tara Rosner, adopted Khalil and his two siblings about 7 years ago. Back then, this couple felt pretty hopeful about raising three black kids in a town that's 1% African American.
You know, they had an amazing example of a president and how you should behave, and that president looked like them. And he was educated, and he took care of all people.
The most recent election changed the social equation for all three Stevens-Rosner kids. Khalil's 13-year-old sister, Aliyah, describes what a classmate told her shortly after Trump became president.
He said, I'll shoot as many black people as I want in the back.
Then this happened to the middle child, 11-year-old Chris.
These kids, they thought it was funny to be saying like the N-word, and they started saying it around me. And
so like other families I've talked with, the Stevens-Rosners say what happened at their kids' schools reflects an atmosphere they call toxic. Tara, who's Korean-American, was adopted into a white family. She, her wife and kids like to visit her parents at their house, about 15 minutes away.
Yes, yeah, somebody in our family wanted to hang the Confederate flag, and I said, we're not coming over if you hang the Confederate flag, not while it's hanging, but never again. And they said, but it's a symbol. And I said, correct, it's a symbol of hatred.
Jory says the resurgence of symbols and language they object to requires a lot of energy to fight each day.
You just need to push harder and you need to make it better for your children because they need to be able to live comfortably in the skin they're in everywhere that they go.
Because in the present atmosphere, hate crimes can follow hate speech. The fear born from that hate may be impossible to measure, but it's enough to keep 10-year-old Khalil Stevens-Rosner awake and worried.
Like at nighttime, I think about like what could happen if Trump really did succeed in what he was planning to do, which he hopefully won't.
What do you think Trump wants to do?
I'm saying it like this. He's trying to create a white world.
Reveal's Will Callis brought us this story. Special thanks to our partners on this story, ProPublica. They put together an animated video you can see on our Facebook or Twitter feed. When we come back, we hear from a Trump true believer who helped pave his way to the White House.
Politics has always been brutal in the United States. Americans love a fight.
You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.